You're listening to Red Eye on Co-op Radio at CFRO 102.7 FM.
To the Tar Sands is a documentary film that follows 19 environmentalists as they cycle from Waterton Park at the Montana-Alberta border north to the Tar Sands. In their 1,300-kilometer journey, the group speaks with people in Alberta about the industry that's changing their landscape, environment, and social and economic life. They ask people they meet one question: how has the tar sands boom affected you? To the Tar Sands showed this week at the Doxa Festival. Its creator says it was made off the back of a bicycle as a low-budget testament to the power of storytelling. The film was directed, produced, edited, and peddled by Jody Martinson, and she's here in our studio this morning. Hi, welcome, Jody.
Hi.
How did the trip get organized to start out?
There's a group of young people who kind of organize under the banner of the Sierra Youth Coalition, and they started to say, that's the youth branch of the Sierra Club of Canada, and they started to say, we're doing all this work about climate change and lobbying about Kyoto protocols and all of this work, but we're ignoring kind of an elephant in the room, which is the tar sands. And they, as they learned more and more about it, they started to say, if we don't address this issue kind of separate and independently of all of the other work we're doing, the work we're doing right now doesn't really amount to much. I mean, this thing is just that big. The tar sands are that big and that important to Canadian climate policy. And so they said, but at that point, you know, it wasn't in the mainstream media all the time. People didn't know about it and wasn't a topic of conversation. And so they said, let's go and ride our bikes across Alberta. It'll be a symbol, but it's also a good way to meet people and get people talking about it, get people talking to us about it, and let's inform ourselves about it. And then when we go back across Canada to the various places we live, we can speak as some kind of experts or on behalf of people who are there and who are living through it and get a different perspective on what's going on there.
Now, one of the cyclists early on in the film makes a comparison to a town doctor connecting the dots between illnesses in town. Tell us about that thinking.
Yeah, we struggled for a long time. I watched a lot of the cyclists kind of argue about what our role was, and a lot came thinking we're going to be these activists because we have the answers initially, and others said, well, I don't know anything about this and I just want to learn, and so that tension always was present in the trip. And this idea of being kind of doctors who diagnose and then go from town to town and say, well, you know, this experience that you're having here with, say, water quality issues, they're having back downstream as well, and you can join up and you know, kind of connecting things. And I think that's really a nice way that the bicycles facilitated what the kind of environmental journey that the cyclists were on, and that was an idea that kept coming back to people, kept helping us understand what we were doing on bikes in Alberta.
Who did you talk to as the group traveled north?
Well, we talked. We kind of made it. That was another thing we discussed at the beginning of the trip. Do we want to try to get the who's who on this? Do we want to get the premier? Do we want to try to get all the CEOs of the big companies and the big environmental activists as well? And I think the conclusion we came to, and I think it was a really smart conclusion, was that's not our strength. You know, on a bicycle, that's actually very difficult. You can't guarantee you're going to be into the city on time. You're making phone calls. So many people just sat on cell phones all day while they cycled, making calls ahead and that sort of thing. But our real strength is the people who pull over on the highway and wonder what the heck we're doing with all these bikes on these highways that have never seen cyclists. Or it's the people who put us up for the night. And so our real connections could come through the people we came face to face with, versus putting all this effort into getting a 10-minute meeting with a PR person.
And there was quite a range of people who became part of the film who you met along the way.
Yeah, we met everyone from one mom who described herself as kind of, she didn't want to be an activist, she had to be an activist because it's in her backyard. Urban planners in the town of Okotoks, First Nation leaders, farmers, workers in the tar sands towards the end. So we met a wide range of people, ranchers, and all in some way were able to connect their lives with what was happening in the north of Alberta at the tar sands boom.
Now, as you say, you met up with a lot of different kinds of people, but you also met up with people in a variety of different ways and different places. That's one of the ways that I found that the film really keeps your interest. There was one scene where you seem to be in someone's farmhouse, or I don't know if it was a community center or so forth, for a big meeting. What was the kind of range of venues where you had those meetups?
Yeah, some of them had been organized in advance. We had heard about someone who had an interesting story to tell, so we had called and arranged to meet with them, or at a town council, for example. We did call and arrange that. And other times, literally, we didn't know what we were going to do when we got to Fort McMurray. It was towards the end of the trip. People were starting to get tired. It was really hard to organize there. We didn't have anyone on the ground there. And so we were cycling along, and someone pulled off from the side of the road and said, "What are you doing?" And then someone from our group said, "Listen, we really need a place to stay. Could we crash on your lawn?" And they so generously opened up their home, not their lawn, their basement to us. It was even better. And then they happened to be a family who has been engaged in the tar sands development for a long time, and so they had all these interesting perspectives that we had been missing so far on the trip. And it was a whole range of ways that we were connecting with people.
What were some of the challenges of filming the entire thing with a camera? And we were speaking before we went on air. I was saying, "Oh, were you in the film?" Because I was watching the film last night, and you talked about there was sort of a setup shot where you were putting the camera actually onto your bike. So how did that whole process work out?
I think part of it is that technology has made this kind of low budget, light traveling filmmaking possible. So I had on the back of my bike a hard case where the camera would sit, and then I had a saddlebag with sound equipment and tapes, and then another one with kind of toothbrush and and all that stuff. And I would try to cycle ahead in the day and then stop, turn around, take out my camera and shoot as cyclists passed initially. Later on, I got in a car that we had rented and got some shots that way. But I think it was a kind of an idea I had. It sounded very simple, and when you start doing it, it's very tiring and taxing, and so I think it's one of these things that you do once and you kind of cut your teeth as a filmmaker, and then you look for someone else to carry a camera for you in your next time that you do it. But I mean it's just such a it was so seamless that way. I mean, it was really something that it was a whim in a sense. I wanted to make films. I had made some short films and things like that, and it just was an opportunity to tell a story I thought needed to be told.
How does that low budget filmmaking aesthetic relate to the ideas that you want to get across in the film?
Yeah, I think they screened it for a class at a school in Quebec, and luckily I got some of the papers that the students wrote about it. And I was reading one last night, and the girl had written the low budget kind of style meant that the filmmaker was up close to the people she was interviewing. So I was, because I had my sound gear mounted right on the camera, I had to get pretty close to keep the sound as clear as I could get it. And so that made for, I think, a lot of a feeling of intimacy that developed, especially towards the end, because the cyclist became more and more comfortable with who I was and what my role was on the trip. And so I think that's part of that low budget feel, where you're in people's, almost in their pores, in their skin, hearing what they have to say, watching every little twitch. I think it's a low budget way to do documentaries, because you can't do a long sweeping beautiful aerial shot or pan.
Well, I thought you had some very good visual, I wouldn't call them tricks, but ways of keeping things really interesting, considering that you're working with a single camera, on a kind of low budget. The film was really great in that sense. Now, it's interesting to hear some of the self-reflection of the participants as they sort of took this trip and how their ideas changed and how they started to challenge themselves. What kind of discussions did group members have about the contradictions they experienced as benefactors of the industry?
Yeah, there was a a lot of debate about, you know, so where does the line, where is the line? Who are the bad guys in this story? And I think that's essentially the struggle of the film, I think, underlying all the rest about the tar sands. And I think it's a struggle that underlies so many environmental conflicts and lots of other conflicts as well. So the cyclists often would talk about, well, those people or those companies or the government, and towards the end started to see, well, it's much more, that line is so murky, where it comes in our own lives and where we, you know, flying to do this bike trip from, say, the Eastern Canada, that raises questions about the ethical ground you stand on when you go and call for a moratorium, a shutdown of the tar sands. So those sorts of tensions, I think they're part of, right now, our conception of who we are as humans relative to the natural world. I think we see ourselves as antagonistic. We think we are parasites on the natural world, and that's a product of our culture. And I'm interested in exploring ways to reconceptualize that, and so I think sometimes the cyclists would say things like, you know, it's not us against them. We have to engage with them to be taken as to be credible about this. They're the people in power. They're the people that can make change in the tar sands, and they need to hear from us. And then other people would say, well, but if we want credibility with the environmental community, we can't be seen talking to the tar sands companies. I think both have really interesting points of view.
What kind of problems did people that you talked to, when you asked that question about what was the effect of the tar sands, what range of responses did you hear in terms of the kinds of impacts that people were experiencing in their lives in Alberta?
There was definitely a heightening as we went north, as you would expect, as we neared kind of the epicenter, Fort McMurray area, where the tar sands are actually located. And so initially people would say things like, well, I don't really connect, I don't know much about what's going on up there, but let me tell you about how housing prices have changed, or how I can't afford anymore to pull the crops out of my field because the price of fuel has gone up so much. And my kids, you know, they have way more students at their school because everybody's moving to Alberta. So people were, you know, seeing the connections that way. Then as we got closer and closer, we ended up in Upgrader Alley, which is just outside of Edmonton. It's where they upgrade a lot of the tar sands, the kind of bitumen that comes out of the tar sands. And people there experience air quality issues that, you know, some days the air in that area is worse than Mexico City in terms of quality. And that's in a rural area of Alberta. I mean, it's quite staggering. And people there would say, you people that live in Calgary or live in Edmonton or live in Montreal, you don't know what it's like, what we're dealing with up here. And so, you know, that hits you pretty hard when you consider yourself a well-versed environmentalist and someone who really cares about the local struggles. And then that kind of, you know, confrontation was pretty amazing and humbling. So, yeah, a wide range. And then, you know, of course, the First Nations communities that are downstream of the actual tar sands. So, yeah, wide range.
And the last 5 or 6 minutes of the film, the group actually approaches, I guess you could call it ground zero, the area where the tar sands in. Can you kind of describe what that landscape's like and how people experienced it?
It's quite staggering when you're on the ground, because I mean we're used to seeing human changes in the land, and then when you see this, it's like a moonscape. And a lot of the cyclists said, I feel like I'm on the moon, or I feel like I'm in a war zone. And it's funny, there they have signs that say things like the equivalent of, you know, so such and such hundred number of whales is moved every day from this land of dirt and trees and living things. They call that overburden. And so when you come at that and you're not impressed by the engineering feat, you're just overwhelmed by the notion that nature and something you fight in your daily life to preserve can be called overburden. I mean, that's quite a moment. So it was a funny way to call it. It's kind of a climax. It was a funny climax, a really depressing and dark climax. Other people, though, said, this is not nearly as bad as I thought it would be. I've seen this before, you know?
I've wondered whether to ask you to tell the very last story in the film, and I hate asking people to give it away, but it was just so funny and such a...
Yeah.
Why don't you tell that story about the cyclist who gets ticketed in Fort McMurray.
Yeah, he said he had gone the night before out in Fort McMurray to try to scope out the nightlife, and he had to take he had to urinate against the building, and a police pulled up and he points out an SUV and said, you know that you're not supposed to be doing that. And he thought, oh, come on. And then they gave him a ticket. And so the ticket was under the Environmental Protection Act, and it was for the unlawful disposal of waste on public land. And so he tells this story standing in front of course, the biggest disposal of waste on public land, the tar sands tailings ponds. And he kind of remarks on the irony of this situation.
It's a great film. How can people get to see it?
Well, it will be it's available through order from my website to thetarsandsfilm.ca, and I expect it will be filming or screening at a few smaller film festivals in BC in the next year or so. So watch for it there as well.
Right, and you're going to be participating this afternoon at the Doxa Festival in a panel called The Ecology of Films. Tell us a little bit about that. Set to this afternoon.
That's right. There are four of us who all screened films on environmental topics at this year's Doxa Festival, and so we're going to talk about what's the potential for filmmaking, documentary filmmaking, for real environmental change, and strategies to get people to engage through film.
So that's going to be at the Pacific Cinematheque at 2 o'clock this afternoon. Thank you very much for joining me. I really enjoyed the film.
Thanks so much for having me.
I've been speaking with Jody Martinson, and you can find out more, as she says, about the film at tothetarsandsfilm.ca. And Jody will be participating in that panel, The Ecology of Films, this afternoon at 2 p.m. at the Pacific Cinematheque.